America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Analfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be for March 30th, 2018. It's going to be the last show of the month. When we come back, it's going to be April. We swear we're not going to be doing any April Fool's shit because we hate that fucking holiday.
Yes. It should die in a fire.
Yeah. As I say annually, every year, once April 1st rolls around, I want to know who it is that came up with the concept of April Fool's, go back in time, and then punch them square in the dick. Over and over again until it turns into a vagina.
Hmm. I've got a pretty fun one planned for World Warriors, but it's one of those where anyone who actually understands knows it's fake.
Yeah. Mm. Those are the best kind.
Oh, yeah. So,
I think
Phil's
seen it.
But you have to show it to me after the show. But, yeah, so this week it was basically shit on the NRA week.
Couldn't have enjoyed that week enough.
Yeah, we had the March for Our Lives thing that happened last Saturday, and it drew some record crowds. Depending on who you listen to, it was either hundreds of thousands of people or it was millions. Mm. A lot of folks all over the world.
Yeah.
Which seems to be sort of the rest of the world saying, you know, America, get your shit together.
Yeah, basically. It's like, we figured this stuff out a long time ago.
Yeah. But, yeah, so we're going to be talking about that. And, of course, there was a backlash. A backlash involving individuals who have no problem apparently going after kids who have suffered a traumatic event.
Hmm.
But
there's a surprising amount of people that want to die on that hill.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's, gotta wonder how those people sleep at night. Like, seriously. But, anyway. On top of that, a very famous gun maker is actually filing for bankruptcy because their sales are in the toilet. Teachers are on strike. West Virginia was just the beginning. It's starting to spread. Also, some Trump news. The Pope said something, and the Vatican is really wishing he didn't. Also, DMX is in some serious trouble. We'll find out why. He wouldn't give it to him.
Oh, dear.
And, Amazon's got another media project they're investing in, and holy shit that they throw a huge chunk of change at them. You'll find out later. But we'll be talking about all that and more in this episode of Let's Weekend. So, as we do, to start us off, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I've still been listening to Battlefield Earth. I'm about a little over three quarters of the way done.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long-ass book.
Well, it's like over 1,100 pages in paperback form. So,
I'm still enjoying that. The pace has picked up quite a bit. There's a whole bunch of alien dignitaries showing up now, and they're going to be talking about stuff, apparently.
Yeah, and like he's got to like, they're getting him prepared to meet them, so they're giving him like this Chinese dragon helmet and stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly the part I'm at, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See, I memorized this damn book front to back in the day, so yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good book, so I'm enjoying that. Been hopefully I'll get, you know, more of it finished this weekend. And well, I don't think I'm going to actually finish the book this weekend, but I'll probably get to about 80 or so percent or so.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I watched the latest episode of Top Gear, which was weird. I'll just leave it at that. For reasons I don't understand, Matt decided to turn a tractor into a muscle car.
Because Matt.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because Matt. So that was a thing that happened. Apart from that, well, I hate spring. Because, yeah, the pollen has started. So that's mm-hmm. awesome. And also the insects. So, yeah, those are great things to be having. Especially when you're, you know, trying to sleep and you start to hear...
Oh, yeah.
Fuck off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that's been it. And probably going to start doing some catch-up on The Expanse, seeing as the third season is really sneaking up on us now. So it's like, you know, it's about a week and a half away. So, yeah, I better get my ass in gear and get caught up. So,
yeah.
That's pretty much it for me. How about you, Pat?
Really just putting as much time as possible into World Warriors before the launch on Thursday.
Yep.
Right now, we're getting the last details sorted out on the overall design of the site and getting as much content as possible poured into the database while, trying to get editorial sorted out, but that may take a little more time. We'll see.
Yeah.
But
all right.
I feel confident that we're going to have one hell of a site ready for people on Thursday.
Yeah. Are you drumming up some publicity there?
Not as much as I would have liked. Obviously, I was supposed to be in California this weekend for NCR, where I was really going to sell the hell out of the site, but that didn't happen. So,
yeah.
And at the moment, I'm just spreading the word as best I can through word of mouth and.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some success there, but I'm definitely going to be, going as hard as I can doing that, you know, the entire lead up to the launch. I'm not worried.
Oh.
Yeah, we got, some interest from some key people. So, you know, as we get closer to launch, I think that's just going to start coming together.
Yeah.
And, you know. Yep. Sounds good to me. Yeah. All right.
My week.
All right, so what about you, Chris?
So I went and saw Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty good.
All right.
Yeah, it's interesting to kind of compare it to the original books because they changed quite a bit of it.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, I think two of the three challenges are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But they did some really cool things with at least one of them.
Mm.
But yeah, it's kind of interesting to see, like, it's kind of really hard to find, you know, discussions about the movie online because it's really toxic. People, you know, deciding long ago that they hated the book and the movie and everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people writing up. I think I saw somebody write up like, "Oh, here's the sequel to Ready Player One." You know, from the woman's perspective, making stupid references. Like, yeah, this is why it's hard to talk about anything related to Ready Player One on the internet because nobody can just be rational.
No,
no. Especially since, like, I think, well, yeah, two of the major protagonists in that book were women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a lot of fun to watch. Hmm. There are definitely some things I kind of wish they did differently. I think the book does a better job, not surprisingly, of world building, especially initially.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about... Because, like, the whole thing with the book initially, Percival is, you know, basically stuck to the school planet.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has no money and can't, you know, go off and enjoy any of the other cool stuff that's out in the Oasis.
Pretty much.
That's never really touched on at all.
Mm-hmm.
He's just kind of waiting on... So, like, the first challenge is a race. They introduce this right away. And nobody has beaten it in 5 years. Because there are some crazy things that happen. And so basically most of the the Gunters have given up. But some still attempt it on occasion, and he can obviously do it because he doesn't have to worry about paying for it. Just unless he zeroes out and crashes.
Yeah.
So he definitely tries to, you know, be careful. And also does some cool things during the race where he kind of drifts with the he drives the Back to the Future car, the DeLorean.
Yeah.
And so there are a few points where he drifts, and as other cars are crashing, they're the cool thing they do is whenever somebody gets killed or, you know, hurt or dies or whatever, they explode into coins.
Nice.
Which they do some cool moments where people get like their arms cut off or shot off or something like that, and they're bleeding coins instead of blood or anything like that. And so he, like, as he's drifting on this race, he is taking advantage of other failed racers and has this mechanism in his car that sucks up those coins to help him, like, refuel his car. And it's pretty cool sequence. And, like, people freak out about references in the book, especially. Here, it's not really a big deal at all because a lot of that is just the fluff that's in the backgrounds.
Yeah.
Of action scenes, because there are a few core ones that are just the basis for each of the challenges. And otherwise, you know, seeing that people, because the whole thing with the Oasis is kind of like the internet in the future.
Yeah.
And you look on the internet now, and you see tons of like SpongeBob memes and all that sort of shit. Like, it's essentially saying that like memes gets to become like a bigger thing where people can just identify themselves with, you know, the hot things or whatever they grew up with or whatever. You know, and kind of the Oasis is kind of like a not shitty version of like Second Life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so obviously people would sell, you know, cosmetics, but the whole cool thing is that they're not just cosmetics. And the whole interesting thing that I like about the Oasis as a concept is that there are tons of these, you know, special treasures that are just, you know, random things from various movies, you know, weapons and all sorts of stuff like that, that are just able to be in there as like potential, like, you know, game-killing items that is just really cool. Thing like, oh, I have this thing, and that just, you know, kills everybody in this whole area. That sort of thing that is just, oh, this comes from, you know, this game or whatever.
Yeah,
like the holy hand grenade is mentioned.
Yeah,
as a thing.
I think, well, somebody brought this up recently, and you talked earlier about how, you know, this everything involving this movie online is just really, really toxic.
Yeah,
but I think somebody brought this up today, and I think it's a really good point. Remember that the book came out in 2011.
Yeah.
And back when it came out in 2011, it was pretty critically lauded. You know, but something changed between then and now.
People are more self-aware of the weird shit with the internet.
Yeah.
And in some ways ashamed and hates anything that reflects that. Back upon them, so that it's really a weird thing.
Yeah. Also the fact that, you know, geek culture has become insanely toxic.
Yeah, especially as more people are becoming cool with it. Not necessarily.
And you should not be, like, look, first of all, you should not be cool with it at all.
Yeah.
Like, look, don't get me wrong, geek culture has always had that part of it that is just kind of toxic in general.
Yeah.
But the important part is that up until recently, everybody in geek culture, most of the people in geek culture had done their part to keep that part of it contained.
Yeah.
But at some point between 2011 and 2018, the dam broke.
Yeah. Yeah, though when I meant being cool with it, I meant just being geeks in general.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of with you know, all the Marvel stuff that's been happening, you know, Game of Thrones, all this stuff that was, you know, things that people were like, oh, I was into Game of Thrones before it was cool. That sort of stuff. Yeah. Like, now there's just millions of people that are huge fans of, you know, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know, effectively this whole fantasy book series, you know, not too different from, you know, like the Lord of the Rings.
I would beg to differ, but I mean, just the point.
In general, yeah. I don't mean like specifically, but in terms of, it's something that nerds obsessed over.
Yeah.
And then became more aware and accepted in the mainstream.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely what happened with Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Then you got people like, have you read even, I forget even what, like the whole big like glossary book that's just all about background lore. It's like all that sort of shit. People want to just measure their dicks constantly about who's the bigger nerd. And this movie is more celebrating about the general acceptance of geek culture, as pretty much everybody that can be in the Oasis is in there. They do some cool scenes where there are fights going on and being able to show what they're doing in the real world as like kind of chaos is going on inside the Oasis, and as well as it just looking a little bit weird in the outside, in the regular world. And I kind of really want the book to be adapted for like a miniseries, like HBO style miniseries, like 6 or 8 episodes, something like that.
Yeah.
Actually let it breathe a little bit more and maybe be a little more faithful.
How long is this movie?
It's about 2 hours and 15 minutes.
2:15, yeah.
And like the book, the events in there happens over like course of a month or so. It's like 5 days here. It's really fast. You don't ever really get too much of a sense of when time passes.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of constantly going.
Yeah.
Which makes sense for a movie. Though I kind of want to see some of the specifics about the book kind of come out and be able to do things with it that can sort of exploit some of the cooler stuff in the book.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
I'm gonna guess that the Blu-ray edition will probably be an extended edition of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
I just want to say before we move on, because we brought it up earlier, and it just really needs to be said. There are basically two axioms that if we in geek culture would just accept on a whim, like just accept as principle, so many of these problems would go away, just so simply. One is you are not defined by your hobby.
Yeah.
Okay? That's not to say hobbies are bad. Hobbies are great. You should have a hobby. Have many hobbies.
Yeah.
They're all fun. But they are not who you are. They do not define who you are.
Yeah.
You know, you are more than just your movie collection. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And number two, and this especially goes for the gaming world, critique does not equal condemn.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah,
definitely.
If, you know, Anita Sarkeesian is not condemning video games as a format or as a medium. And you don't even necessarily have to agree with every critique she's made. I certainly as hell don't. But she isn't trying to kill your puppy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, critiques and reviews and all that are opinions.
Yeah.
They're not factual. They're not, you know, a thesis like trying to prove these things factually with evidence and all this. It's one person's opinion.
Critics do not owe you a goddamn unbiased view.
There's no such thing as an unbiased view.
Exactly. So, you know, just, you know, that's basically the whole source of the Gamergate thing. Because all of a sudden people from outside were critiquing parts of video games, and if your whole identity is based around gaming, you take it as a personal insult. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like you've taken it so personally that now you feel oppressed, and that's how a Gamergator is born.
Yep, and you have the right people coming in to exploit that for their own gain.
Now, the good thing is that's all basically burning out now. You can very clear – it's been very – if you've been paying attention over the last year or so, you can see it's all burning out. But – But yeah, so it's this weird thing. Geek culture has gone through this cycle where it was ridiculed, then ambivalence, and then lauded, and then just went back to toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway,
now,
moving.
Yeah, and now it kind of just needs to move the fuck on.
Yeah.
Don't let the shit that's happened in the past be the hill you die on.
Exactly.
For all of time. Move on, because there's going to be plenty of cool new things to obsess about. Yeah, kind of to put a bow on Ready Player One, like the main things I wasn't a huge fan of is when they explicitly dive in on like gamer things, specifically just making references in terms of how the mechanics of this whole world work and all that. Just like, gamer thing, It's like,
yeah, it's that kind of. It's like, look, you know, in jokes are fine, but
even then, it's like, oh, here's like a dumb joke that everybody will get because it's. It's like when you played the Pac-Man and you got, you know, the extra life or whatever. It's, you know, it's simple jokes that they kind of make in there to be like, yeah, see, everybody gets the game thing, the game jokes. But yeah, it's a pretty good movie, and there's some cool moments, especially some of the stuff that happens later in the book happens in the movie. But a little bit differently. There's no like weird obscure Spider-Man mech, Japanese Spider-Man mech in there, but there's some cool anime stuff that people will enjoy. And the way they use the Iron Giant, I saw people like, oh, the fact that the Iron Giant's in a fight shows they have no reverence for the movie and all that. It's like, it's not the actual Iron Giant. It's an avatar.
Yeah.
It's like, fucking stop trying to sit here and do gatekeeping with your beloved
child. That gatekeeping, I fucking hate it. I deal enough with that shit in the left-wing circles I have to deal with. I don't like it in my hobbies either.
Yeah, it's like, fuck, they're trying to have a fun thing here. Somebody figures out how to get the Iron Giant in the game, and it's a really fucking awesome thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a reflection upon the original work because it's not. It's.
And by the way, you know that I'm pretty sure Ernest Cline was like executive producer or something on this, right?
Yeah, he wrote the initial script on the.
Yeah. So he approved all of this.
Yeah.
So what the fuck are these people complaining about?
It's people being a little too protective.
Pedantic assholes.
Their childhood stuff, and it's like, no, like. If you, because it's like in PlayStation Home, one of the things I got was a skin that was Nathan Drake. And it's like, if I did stupid shit in there, that doesn't mean I'm ruining Nathan Drake's good name.
Yeah.
Or whatever, as a character. It's like, there's fucking differences between this shit.
If that was the case, then Uganda Knuckles would have killed the Sonic franchise last year.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Ready Player One. People should check it out. I don't know what the internet is really saying as a whole.
I would advise ignoring it.
Yeah. I've seen some things, but I've just mostly ignored it.
Because
it's like, I've seen like threads on forums like wanting to tear down Ready Player One, and it's like, there's no point even posting in them or saying you like it.
No.
Or like trying to get into discussion because it's not going anywhere. You're not going to change their mind. They're not going to.
Yeah.
Suddenly post the one thing that, oh, it just ruins it for me. Like,
yeah. Look, if you're in a discussion with someone and one person is being an asshole, you don't owe them a response.
Yeah, where, like, the topic is, how does anybody like this thing after this and this happens?
Yeah, you don't owe that person a response.
Yeah.
Because they are trying to get a rise out of you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, the most I would ever say is, like, you know what, I enjoy this thing. That's about all I can say.
Yeah.
Because that's all that needs to be said.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, to move on, I've been watching more Drew Carey Show.
Mm-hmm.
I am in season 6, which is, let's see, that's where he actually dies. Goes in a coma and dies. ends up switching bodies with his nephew, who is about to be born, and he is unsure of whether Mimi would be a good mom for him. So he asks Drew to take his place, which involves some good moments of Drew dressed up as a baby, sort of actually in like the, you know, the crib and all that sort of stuff, but as like an adult man, which you definitely see like the actors almost breaking at the absurdity of what they're trying to do here, but act like it's an actual baby. It's some pretty good stuff. Yeah, I'm looking forward to putting some more time in that. I think I got 3 more seasons to go after this. I'm curious to see some of the later stuff, because that's where my memories of the show is a little bit fuzzier. As they sort of started changing time slots and then the whole changeover with the whole the store as to what it is and all that. But yeah, that's been good. I guess I've also been watching more Dragon Ball Z Kai. Where I'm at is pretty much up to the point where Frieza joins the fight.
Yep.
Where they make the 2 wishes on the Dragon Balls. And then the elder Namek guy passes away, which pisses off Vegeta hugely when he realizes the trick that Krillin and Gohan have pulled on him. He's like way more pissed than probably any other moment in the show. Almost really, it's almost at the point where he should be cursing. He is that pissed. But yeah, now we're getting to the point where Frieza is about to join the fights, and things are not going to be going well or go quickly, I guess. That's a fight that lasts quite a while. I think I got quite a bit more to go for this season. But yeah, listening to the Giant Bomb podcast as they're doing this, definitely a lot of their questions can be answered by just watching Dragon Ball. Because they're like confused about the cooldown period for the Dragon Balls. It's like, yeah, if you watch Dragon Ball, that's a huge crux of that series. Of them trying to get the Dragon Balls, realizing they're not going to be able to do anything for a year. And so doing other things. Which is where they get to do a lot of their cool stuff, like training for the tournaments. And some of the other cool stuff, the Red Ribbon Saga is in between. No, that's during one of the Dragon Ball runs, I guess. But yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff there. I've been playing more Vostok Inc., the weird dual stick shooter idle game. I got to the third galaxy, or the third solar system, I guess, that appears to have red pandas. That's like the main race. And they are, they want to kill you. They act like red pandas. They're very quiet. And then they say, like, death.
Yep.
Death to the invaders.
Okay.
And so then you're like, oh. It's all cute. It's all cutesy in that solar system. Cutesy music, all that sort of stuff. And then these apparently very feisty red pandas that want you to die. Because you have invaded their space. They're very threatened. And yeah, that's pretty good. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that. I've been playing more MLB, the show 18. I've been kind of waiting a little bit for opening day so I get the final rosters. So I can start a franchise save on there. I'm working on a new Road of the Show character, like one that's on first base, not a pitcher, so I can get ready to do a video. I've been wanting to do more, another video or video of that. I've just been so busy this week, so I'm hoping to get that done this weekend. Sort of show off a lot of the cool stuff that's in that game.
All right, well, I guess it's my turn now. Still playing Breath of the Wild. I have now conquered all 4 Divine Beasts, and I now have the Master Sword.
Hooray.
Yep. And Those of you who don't know, you need 13 heart containers to finally get a master sword. I think that's pretty fairly common knowledge now, but just in case you're curious, that's what you got to do. Also, is it just me, or is the Great Deku Tree kind of a dick? Because when he sees you at this point, he's like, oh, look who finally showed up. Took you long enough, dick. Yeah. But, yeah, so I got that now, but before I go fight...
Well, when you consider all of the talking about the Link has probably done at this point,
mm-hmm.
He's not wrong.
Yeah. But, yeah, so... Yeah, so before I go, like, fight Ganon, though, I'm going to go try and track down all the memories on the camera so I can get that part of it done.
Yeah.
I've been told that's probably a good idea to do before you go fight Ganon, but that's just me. Also, maybe get some side quests done first. Make sure I'm properly prepared before I go off to fight him, because I have a feeling that it's going to be a pain in the ass to fight him.
It's Ganon. He's supposed to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah, just my intuition is what's telling me there. So I got that taken care of, and I guess at some point I'm going to get around to the DLC stuff, the Champions Ballad specifically. That game is a lot of fun. Very addictive, and somehow it has never felt old the whole time I've played it.
Hmm.
Always something new to find around the corner. But, other than that, I am usual doing lots of reading. I have started reading this particular book, written by Stefan Bachman called The Peculiar. And it's supposed to be a middle grade book, but you wouldn't know it by reading it because of how well written it is. It's basically a sort of a alternate history fantasy steampunk story about some point in the early 1700s in this little English village called Bath. All of a sudden, these folks in Bath, they experience what looks like a rain of black crow feathers. And then one day, the village is just gone. Like, the whole thing is just leveled to the ground. There's no explosion or smoke or fire, nothing like that. And then all of a sudden, people start reporting sightings of the fair folk starting to show up again. And then suddenly everybody realizes what's just happened. The magic has come back. And now these folks are starting, the fey folk are starting to show up again, and... Being that this is the 1700s British Empire, you know exactly how they react.
Yeah.
So there's a war. They call it the Smiling War because the fair folk during the war, because of their magic powers, were able to leave a lot of smiling white human skulls in their wake. Fun for the whole family. And, But eventually, you know, the fair folk, they can't stand up to the might of cannon and musket balls. So eventually, they're massacred. Some of them are massacred. Some of them are enslaved and sent off to factories. Some of them are massacred again. And then by the time we start in the book, which is in the Victorian era, fair folk are basically now citizens, but most of them are basically residing in a ghetto, which is the old village of Bath. And in the story, we... are told the perspectives of two individuals. One of them is a fairy child named Bartholomew. He's half fairy, and because he's half fairy, he can pass for human, but his sister definitely cannot. And then we got another gentleman who is actually a member of Parliament, and he's sort of wrapped up in a murder mystery involving the murder of a bunch of changeling children. And one of the people he's having to deal with is another MP, who happens to be actually the first seed member of Parliament. He's High Fae. He's a High Elf. Or, you know, that's what his background is. And the problem is that in this world, they can't go back to the fairy world. The fairy world, the road that goad from there to there is completely gone and they can never come back. So because the fairy folk are around, it affects a lot of things about how the world and world history is gone. For one thing, the British Empire into the Victorian era has managed to keep control of all of its colonies, including the Americas, because they have trolls and giants to throw into their armies. And, well, if you've ever played Skyrim...
yeah.
And, of course, you know, they also learn how to actually use magic to an extent. So, you know, they can reproduce musket balls very fast. Also, in order to keep the magic sort of on, you know, suppressed to a certain extent, in the city of Bath, they have a church bell that rings every 5 minutes because, for whatever reason, church bells somehow dispel magic. And also, they found that things like cold iron can, you know, work against fairy folk, too. It actually becomes a political issue because as they're attempting to integrate the fairy folk into the general population, there are still what they call anti-fairy unions who make it a source of pride of carrying around old mechanical watches that are made entirely of iron. And, yeah. And also, because, you know, they have to deal with the reemergence of magic, they decide they need to invest more in technology, and so steam and clockwork technology has proceeded exponentially. So now by the time the story starts, there's automaton street sweepers and mechanical birds and self-driving carriages, stuff like that. It's absolutely freaking fascinating. It really is.
Is this supposed to be a young adult?
Middle grade.
Middle grade?
It's like the little part below... Like, what can I compare it to? Sort of like Harry Potter.
Okay.
That particular age range.
Hmm.
Which is like the older children. Young adult is technically like teenagers.
Yeah.
So this is like around 11 and 12.
Yeah, pre-teen.
But you wouldn't know it because of how just unbelievably well written it is.
Hmm.
But, yeah, so if you get a chance, check it out. There's also the sequel called The Whatnot, and... Stephen Bachman, he's also written, he has actually written a young adult novel called A Drop of Night, which is like a historical thriller. You can look into that one, too. But other than that, doing the usual music and Netflix, I've been trying my absolute best to listen to Angels and Airwaves. Does everybody know what that band is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the band Tom DeLonge formed after Blink 182.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the music part is good. It's really solid space rock, but it's Tom DeLonge's voice, man.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I mean, I don't care. He can be doing these whole albums about this really concept album about this really serious, like, alien sci-fi story, and all I can hear is all the small things. And it's just, it's that whiny West Coast bullshit accent, man.
Yeah.
It just ruins it, but...
Probably doesn't help that guy's nut job.
Oh, yeah. He's a bit of a loon.
Yeah.
A talented loon, but a loon all the same.
There's a reason why the rest of his band kicked him out.
Yeah. And then, of course, Netflix. I finally finished all four seasons of BoJack. Holy shit, that last episode... I mean, that next to last episode in season four is a fucking mind trip. Mm. I'm not even going to describe it. You just got to watch the show for yourself.
Yeah.
And because that's over with, I've started watching Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood on the reg. So,
have you tried out the live action one?
Nope, and I don't intend to.
I'm always curious about the live-action anime adaptations of...
The ones that come out of Japan are usually shit.
Mm.
And they're also, like, the musical adaptations.
Yeah.
Like, I was always fascinated by the ones for Prince of Tennis.
Yeah, the Takurazaka review.
Yeah.
It's like,
those are weird things.
Yeah. Well, see, those...
That... basically Dragon Ball Z Tennis.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a musical.
Yeah, but, So, yeah, that's basically what I've been doing. So, has everybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No, not really. Other than if you haven't checked out Voltron yet, yeah, check that out. It's
the really current good. One.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is good. Mm. I've been told that it's far better than it has any right to be.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
But okay, so I guess then it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today we're going to talk about some food. And specifically about a type of food that we all eventually had to introduce ourselves to as we are all Japanophiles. It's the one thing that Japan introduced to the world that has become now universally loved. It's sushi! Yay, sushi! Come on, I'm not hearing.
Nope. I'll be the one voice of dissent here. No, no sushi for me.
Well, you're a Canadian. It's not even a real country.
Shots
fired. But I get it, because I'll be completely honest. When sushi was first introduced in the United States, it was like this thing that it really took a while to catch on. Because I remember very distinctly watching an episode of Double Dare on Nickelodeon and having like one of the at the end of the show the winning family, in order to get the final big prize, they had to go through that obstacle course.
Yeah.
And one of the obstacles was like a really giant plastic onigiri roll.
Hmm.
Or actually, what is it called? I forget. The maki sushi, maki rolls, the ones that, as my dad used to say, look like little tires.
Yeah.
And basically saying, have you ever heard of this stuff called sushi? It's disgusting. because it's that weird Japanese stuff. And now, of course, you can get that shit at a 7-Eleven. So guess who won that little argument?
Well, I definitely don't recommend the 7-Eleven.
Yeah, stay far away from that shit.
It is still hard to find a sushi joint that won't give you botulism.
Yeah, but anyway, so before we begin, just a quick description of sushi. What sushi itself is. Sushi is, first of all, it's specifically referring to the rice, the type of rice, vinegared rice, specially prepared and made so that it's malleable and can be molded by hand. It is not a reference to the stuff that's on top. That's called sashimi. And of course, when we're talking about sashimi, we're talking about raw fish. Very fresh raw fish. That's important. And there's basically three types of sushi that everybody knows. There is the previously mentioned makizushi, the ones that are rolled in nori weed and basically look like little tires. There's what I most definitely prefer over the others, nigiri sushi. That's the one where it's a block of rice with then the top on top. And then finally there's the tamaki sushi, which is when they basically take the nori reed, roll it into a little cone, and then stuff it with random shit. There's other varieties too. There's what they call scattered sushi, which is like when they give you a big bowl of sushi rice and then throw shit on top of it. There's tempura sushi. Well, you can kind of guess what that is. Tempura, it's basically rolled and then breaded and then cooked a little bit. There's also like the famous square sushi that you can put called sazajushi, which you can find in places like in Osaka. Basically, a lot of the Kansai region. And there's just endless varieties that go on from there. In Japan, you can get these places at, like, big four-star restaurants. Or you can go to one of those conveyor belt sushi places. Those are always fun. But
expensive, though.
Yeah, they can be. And it can get expensive really quick and you not realize it at all. Because, again, it's just a piece of sushi on a plate going down a conveyor belt. And you can rack up a bill pretty quickly without realizing it, believe me. But as for sushi itself, what a lot of people don't know is that what we know of as sushi now, that as we envision it, is actually pretty recent. The sushi we... we think of when we think of sushi has only existed since the 1820s. Before that, sushi, like it's originally known as narazushi, which is where the part of the word sushi comes from. It was actually salted fish that was stored in fermented rice in big jars, which if that sounds familiar, that's kind of like how kimchi is done. And then afterwards, they would actually discard the rice before they ate the fish. I know, that's crazy. And then at some point, somebody decided to have the rice with the fish, and was like, isn't that bad? And, you know, sort of that went down on the way to making it the type of sushi we know. And then sometime in the 1300s, they started adding vinegar into the rice mixture. Up to this point, it had just been fermented rice. Now they added vinegar, which gave it, you know, vinegar has kind of a sour taste to it, so it gives it a kind of a sour flavor to it. It also helped to increase the longevity of the dish, because few things can preserve shit like vinegar. And then eventually it would make its way to Osaka. Anybody who's ever been to Japan can tell you Osaka is basically food town Japan. So they took it, they turned it, they started using, they started coming up with the idea eventually of, hey, what if we took this fish that, you know, we just got out of the sea, we cut off pieces of it, and we put it on top of this rice. What would that do? And that's basically how it came into existence. They actually didn't start doing the whole practice of, you know, forming it into, like, individual bites of food as we know it now until the 1800s, specifically sometime between the 1820s and 1830s. It's believed to have started probably somewhere in Ryogoku at a little shop sometime in 1824 by a gentleman by the name of Hanaya Yohei, who died in 1858. Back then, it was just called Idome sushi, or, you know, Edo-style sushi. You know, Edo, for those you remember, is now
Tokyo.
Yeah, it's Tokyo. And so that's sort of how we use it today. In fact, Idome nigirizushi is the term that they use for high-quality sushi, even though the actual quality of the ingredients may be questionable. So yeah,
your mileage may vary.
Yeah, your mileage may vary. So some quick things to know about sushi. If you're gonna eat it, there's some things you need to know. First and foremost, put down the chopsticks because you're not supposed to eat sushi with them. Sushi is a finger food by design.
Yeah.
Second of all, do not immerse the shit into soy sauce. Okay, the soy sauce is for you to dip a part of the topping into and nothing more. If you slab that shit with wasabi, their ancestors will start weeping.
And so will you.
Yeah. And so will you, because holy shit, wasabi will burn the inside of your nasal cavity out like you just swallowed cigarette ash.
Hmm. The best thing to do with first-timers, though, is to tell them it's mint sauce.
Yeah, that's fun. That's always fun. Yeah, it's mint sauce, man. You'll love it. I can smell nothing but fire.
Yeah.
But and finally, sushi is one bite. You're not supposed to bite it in half or nibble at it. You're supposed to put the whole thing in your mouth and chew. There's a reason why with a lot of sushi, if you bite it in half, the topping may slip off with you. Because that's not how you're supposed to eat it.
Yeah.
You stupid gaijin fuck. And that has been a little information on sushi. And it is delicious. Fuck you, Phil. So for the record, I understand.
I don't like sushi, but I respect it.
That's
all I'm going to say.
I do, however, understand people's aversion to the idea of eating raw seafood if they've never experienced it. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Really? Join us next time when I describe the origins of Rocky Mountain oysters. Guess what? They're not from the Rocky Mountains. They aren't oysters. All right. Now it's time for the show proper. And as always, we have to start with our assholes of the week. And we've got two assholes of the week. And I'm still to this day not sure why anybody actually listens to them. But here we go. So, as everybody knows, the March for Our Lives rallies happened all over the world last Saturday. And, of course, some people have picked a really weird hill to die on over this shit. Rick Santorum, who, by the way, isn't even a congressperson anymore. Like, he's not in politics anymore. I don't understand why anyone...
Well, he's on CNN. He's a CNN person now.
Yeah. Well,
I guess that's where they've fallen in terms of trying to get people on that side of the fence to talk about stuff.
Yeah. Basically, he came out and said, you know what? Instead of these kids protesting, they should learn CPR.
Hmm.
I'm like, is this like a case of where you can't walk and chew gum at the same time, Rick?
Yeah, which he did come out afterwards saying, yeah, he misspoke. Talking about, let's see, the kids should be looking to... not be looking to someone else to solve their problems, which is kind of hard to do when
you're 17.
Yeah. It's like the whole point is you're a constituent of the people in Congress,
mm-hmm.
and you're pleading to them, hey, we need to change these laws.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the protest is about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I may have some crazy Canadian values, but, I'm kind of the opinion that if you're going to school, the last thing you should need to be worrying about is getting shot. So,
well, see, that's because you're Canadian and you don't love freedom.
Yep.
No, I say that sarcastically, but you know there's someone out there who believes that wholeheartedly.
Yep.
And that's where we are as a species right now.
Hmm.
But of course, I'm not at all surprised that he would, you know, roll this all back, because that's kind of what these assholes do.
Yeah.
He didn't even really roll it back. He just kind of rolled into a different direction.
Yeah.
It's, well, he's victim blaming. That's what he went into.
Yeah, it's mostly victim blaming. And also the fact that since, you know, he's not in politics anymore, he doesn't really have, you know, any votes to lose anymore. So...
Yeah. Yeah, there's like some weird narrative that came out recently of like people saying, oh, you should have been nice to him and he wouldn't have shot. She was like, no, that was completely out of the bag because he was terrorizing everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, but honestly, Rick wasn't Mr. Santorum, who, of course, will never, ever be known as a politician anymore. He will forever be known as the man who helped coin the term Santorum. He's not even the biggest jerk of this week. Nope, that goes to Laura Ingraham, who, after David Hogg, who, those who don't know, David Hogg, of course, is probably him and Emma Gonzalez are now probably become the face of the Parkland survivors and their activism. He was doing an interview with, I guess it was TMZ or somebody, and he was talking about how, you know, he had been trying to apply to college, and he'd been turned down by a few, even though he had a 4.0.
And he got accepted into some others as well.
Yeah. Of course, she does. She won't bring that up, but that's besides the point. Even though he had a 4.2 great GPA.
Yeah.
But then, of course, they said, you know, are you surprised that, you know, considering what you've been doing and the name you've made for yourself, that no one is actually soliciting you? And then he brought up a good point and said, he's like, well, a lot of good people don't get to make it into college because of just how expensive it is. You know? Yeah. So he actually is self-aware, and he knew that. You know, it's
he tied it into a knot and handed it back to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then she goes on Twitter. She posts that video and says, you know, blah, 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 whines about not getting into college.
She said, David Hogg rejected by 4 colleges to which he applied and whines about it. Dinged by UCLA with a 4.1 GPA. Totally predictable giving acceptance rates.
And as you can guess, the world didn't like that. Not one bit, because she's basically picking on a kid who survived a traumatic shooting.
Yeah.
He's trying to find some semblance of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out what he's going to do in the future.
And everybody is basically, even freaking Mike Cernovich, of all people, was like, lady, you got to back off.
Yeah.
Just people fucking laid into her, like, seriously. And, like, I mean, she deserved every fucking bit of it.
Yeah.
And then David Hogg actually got a list of her sponsors and posted them on Twitter. Yeah. And then he started communicating with them over Twitter one by one. And because of that, her subscribers started abandoning her. Her
advertisers.
Well, yeah, I wish her subscribers were abandoning her.
I think the number is up to 13 now.
Yep.
Yeah, like immediately, like the first reply in his tweets is Hulu.
Yeah.
Replying to him is like, we'd like to confirm we are no longer advertising on Laura Ingraham's show and are monitoring all our ad placements carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess I saw somebody that works at Hulu who is like a customer retention person.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just supposed to respond to people calling about canceling and all that. Mm-hmm. Got like a dozen calls. From conservatives who were mad and threat to, cancel our subscriptions, was able to only confirm one of them.
Yeah.
That account. And they were oddly weird about it. Like, you better get this solved by Monday.
Mm-hmm. It didn't but to make it long story short on that front, it didn't work. People are not, by and large, support those advertisers leaving her side.
Yeah.
Because she fucking picked on a high schooler.
Yeah.
Lady, you spoke at the fucking RNC.
Yeah, she did the fake Nazi salute.
Yeah.
And then she actually went and apologized.
In the most passive-aggressive bullshit way possible.
Disingenuous.
Yeah. Oh,
trying
God.
To find what's...
In the spirit of Holy Week.
Is that... Do they really call this Holy Week?
Yeah, it's, because it's up to the point when, it's Resurrection, so Easter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that they had, like, an official term for that.
Yeah.
Okay, she's like, oh, I did some reflecting on this, and I'd like to apologize... I don't know if she even specifically called out David, but basically saying she apologized to all the Parkland survivors and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, she only did this because of the advertisers pulling out.
Yeah, and David Hogg is like, lady, I don't accept your apology.
Yeah.
You're doing this just so you can make yourself look better.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his sister was even like, yeah, she's only doing this because of the advertisers. I was like, yeah, that's the worst part about it.
And David Hogg, in fact, lamented the fact that it took this incident to finally get all those advertisers to leave her, because she's done some pretty heinous shit in the past.
People have been compiling that stuff.
For example, back when she was at Dartmouth, as part of the Dartmouth Review, with her then-boyfriend Dinesh D'Souza. Yeah, him. They actually had a person go into a secret, into a club that was mostly of closeted gay Dartmouth students, had a tape recorder there, and then published the name of the closeted gay students at Dartmouth in the Dartmouth Review. Because she's that kind of asshole.
Yeah.
And she's never apologized for it either. She's 100% unrepentant.
Yeah, I even found it weird that she even apologized, because, like, any of the Fox News people that insults the wrong people on this sort of stuff never pulls back and apologizes,
mm-hmm.
even if it's a fake apology.
Yep.
That was just a weird thing. It's like, well, at least you're bigger than them, even though that's a really, really low
setting
bar.
Setting the bar real low.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you stepped on a bar that was on the ground. but yeah. So, it seems like that's going to keep going. I think she even refused to post on her account, like, a preview of what the show tonight is going to be
mm-hmm.
about. Like, had some co-hosts, like, post it on his account. Even think about like a month or so ago, she was shitting on two of the best NBA players in the world.
Yeah.
And like nobody really batted an eye at that, really.
Yeah.
But those two guys wouldn't waste their time on her.
No.
Because they got better things to do that are going to actually make them money. So.
Yeah.
Whereas you got somebody like David Hogg who's like, all right, let's go.
Yeah. You know, I'm in high school.
Yeah. The worst thing that happens is I go back to high school.
Yeah. To wipe that taste out of our mouths, because those are two very loathsome individuals, we're going to talk about who our heroes of the week are. And our heroes are the millions of people all over the world who marched at the March for Our Lives protest.
Yep.
Which was, you know, primarily teenagers. You know, school kids.
Yeah, they had a lot of speakers that were some of the faces you know from the Parkland survivors. Yeah.
Emma Gonzalez in particular, who basically gave what's probably going to be considered a historical note in history now. Her 6-minute, 20-second speech where she actually did not say a whole lot, and that was kind of the point.
She talked a little bit and then named off all the victims and then mm-hmm. just stayed silent for the rest of it.
Trying to keep her composure, even though you could see the tears pouring down her cheeks.
Yeah. Sort of signifying the amount of time that it took to kill all 17 people.
Yeah, and then in the end she says, since I've been up here, it's now been 6 minutes and 20 seconds. By this time, the shooter has abandoned his rifle, hidden amongst the students, and will be another hour before he's apprehended by the cops. Stand up for your own life before it has to become someone else's job. Yeah. And that was pretty much the speech heard all over the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was another one that actually threw up during her speech.
Yeah, wasn't that the little girl? What, the 11-year-old? No.
It was Samantha Fuentes.
Ah, right.
And she took a bullet to the thigh.
Mm-hmm.
It has a little bit of damage to her face.
Yeah.
From the shrapnel. And she said, I just threw up on international television and it feels great.
Yeah.
I guess they're also passing out price tags. Instead of $1.05. Not a Team America joke.
No.
But coincidentally the same thing.
Yeah.
Basically signifying how much money they were worth in terms of the NRA money that Marco Rubio got,
mm-hmm.
divided by every student that was in Florida.
Yep. And the NRA has pretty much kept their mouth shut.
They had some really stupid shit they did.
Mm-hmm.
So was it like a month out from the shooting and they posted a picture of an AR-15 on their account?
Yep.
People were talking about, you know, being 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you're not being subtle at all.
Nope.
Yeah, they had some others. MLK's granddaughter was there. She talked about she had a dream of a gun-free world.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There's another girl from, I'm not sure where she's from, but she talked about how, you know, black women or the black girls do not get talked about as much.
Yeah, she was the 11-year-old, right?
Yeah, that was the 11-year-old.
And her overall point was that when we talk about gun violence in this country, even though, you know, we talk about these school shootings, in hindsight, the school shootings are fairly irregular. But, you know, gun violence is its biggest victims are, you know, women of color, people of color in general.
Yeah.
and they don't really get the same amount of attention that's deserved.
Yep.
And
let's see. Oh yeah, Paul McCartney was there.
Oh yeah, because like he said, I'm there because you know my friend John Lennon was killed by a gunman in 1980.
Yeah, he was at the New York protests, so he was talking about how he was shot not too far from where they were.
Mm-hmm. By Mark David Chapman.
Yep.
But yeah, so I came away from all that a lot more optimistic than I have been in a long time.
Yeah, and it's weird that a lot of people obviously took the wrong message from it.
Yeah.
They're like thinking that the whole thing was about telling politicians to do make change right now.
Yeah.
It's like, no, if you're not for this change, then we will be voting you out.
Yeah. This is a statement saying that, you know, this is your warning. Either you start making something happen or we're going to find someone who will.
Yeah.
Well, and if it has to, it'll be us.
I mean, that's fine. If they don't have the wherewithal to figure out what they're actually saying, they don't deserve to be in office anyway.
Yeah. Well, you remember during the whole big CNN town hall, Marco Rubio kept talking about, you know, we're going to work on things in the next 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't seen anything.
Nope.
Yeah.
Not a damn thing.
I'd be very surprised if the NRA survives. Yeah, they may be a powerful lobbying group, but the sentiment against them right now is really, really
overwhelming.
Well, I think, I'll be perfectly honest, I think the NRA race will survive, but it's going to take some serious restructuring on their part.
And people are going to fall on the sword.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if Wayne LaPierre ends up getting the boot.
Well, I think he has to at this point.
Yeah, and Dana Loesch ends up getting kicked to the curb. Well, Dana Lash, that's her name, but some people are definitely going to have to take one for the team because otherwise, you're right, the NRA won't survive. Especially considering that, you know, one of their biggest funders is going under. And that's called a...
Don't point it out. All right, just keep going.
Yeah. For those you don't know, Remington, which is like one of the big gun manufacturers in the world, they are going under. They have filed for bankruptcy after declining sales.
Hmm. Is Chapter 11 they're filing for? Or?
Yep.
Yeah.
Chapter 11.
Hmm.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't mean they're going under.
Yeah.
No.
The people that have control of their brands and the debts and all that still intend to keep the business going.
Yeah.
They're just essentially trying to get rid of the debt.
Chapter 7 is full bankruptcy.
Yeah. But what this does show is that apparently in spite of what arguments are saying, apparently gun sales are going down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no black man in the White House to be afraid of.
I mean, at least to the certain extent that you know, one of the major arms manufacturers in the world has actually had to file for Chapter 11.
Yeah, though they have a number of suits that are going
against
on.
Them as well.
Yes, which is seems like this is a tactic to try and get out of that.
Yeah, but that's pretty amazing. Maybe Smith & Wesson will be next.
Maybe.
I don't know, because Smith & Wesson is like a – not just a gun manufacturer. It's damn near an American institution.
Yeah.
They might be one of those companies that's considered too big to fail. I don't know. But yeah, so apparently amongst all this stuff, it is actually hurting their sales numbers.
Yeah.
But that's not so. On top of that, you know, we've been seeing some serious like changes in the last couple weeks regarding a lot of stuff, and not just guns either, but also organized labor. Because for those who don't know, there was a big teacher strike in West Virginia over the last couple of weeks. And it more or less succeeded in its aims. But here's the thing. It started to spread because now teachers in Kentucky are fixing to go on strike after their state legislature has passed pension reform.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that was not what they were working on at that point.
Nope.
It was a completely different bill about waste.
Mm-hmm.
Wastewater or something like that. They basically pulled out this pension reform bill that they were working on a few weeks ago. Everybody thought it was dead, and just like, nope, we're passing this.
Yeah. They slipped it in as a rider.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like, and it got through both the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Because when nobody actually reads this stuff.
Yeah, because it happened within hours.
Yep. And so, yeah, the teachers in Kentucky are going to go on strike, and I very much doubt that they're going to be the last.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, there's very much a pendulum that has been broken for a while, I guess, for mm-hmm. Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Teacher unions have been very much vocally saying, we need to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the GOP running things didn't exactly pay attention to how they wanted it to be fixed.
Nope.
Which I guess people were there at when the whole thing was getting passed and basically saying, chanting, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll remember in November. So, hey.
Yeah.
They'll have to enjoy their last few months.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean,
a whole bunch of just really egregious legislation being passed between now and then.
Yeah, and that's not going to help them because all that does is piss them off even more.
Yeah.
Especially Kentucky, because Kentucky's in that part of the country that back in the old days used to have a very strong labor union underside to it. And when those folks get pissed off enough, you're going to see some shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so now we got to move on to Mr. T-R-U-M-P.
Yeah, the Trump dog.
Yep.
So we've got a few stories about him.
Yeah, so first and foremost, he has fired his VA secretary, David Shulkin, and has named Ronnie Jackson as his replacement.
Who hasn't he fired at this point?
I think Kellyanne is still on.
Yeah, Conway and Pence.
Yeah, and he can't fire Pence. So.
Yeah. And Ronnie Jackson was the White House physician.
Yeah, he's the guy who came out and he's the one who said, you know, he's in good health. And he's just 1 pound under obesity.
Hmm. Yeah, initially when I saw this announced, I was like, wait, that sleazy doctor? That he was fucking touting like around the time of the election.
Nope.
The guy was slumped in his chair. It's like, fuck, what kind of doctor is this?
No, not that guy.
No, it's he is a military physician.
Mm-hmm.
Very much got a lot of praise for that part of his credentials.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are like, yeah, but what credentials does he have to run this huge organization?
Yeah.
He'll fit right in.
Now, Shulkin himself has claimed that the reason he was fired is because he was an obstacle in the way of the administration wanting to privatize the VA.
Hmm. Yeah.
But there's also talk that apparently under his tenure, the VA has become a really toxic environment to work in. Keep in mind, we had the VA scandal a few years ago. And, it's still kind of nasty over there.
Yeah, this one's kind of up in the air. Might have actually had a reason to fire him.
Yeah, but as far as Shulkin himself, he's basically been making the rounds of TV news. Basically, that's the story he's sticking to. That he was fired because he's an obstacle to the privatization of the Veterans Administration.
Hmm.
But honestly, we don't really know. All we know is that the guy who's going to be replacing him may or may not be that qualified.
Yeah.
But of course, that's not where it stops. Next up, Trump's bid to throw out the Emoluments Clause. He was filing some suits to have that thrown out, and a federal judge said nope.
Well, this is in relation to the suit that Maryland and D.C.
Mm-hmm.
has against him involving the Emoluments Clause.
Mm-hmm.
And he put up an appeal to have it dismissed, and there's like, no, we're going to keep this going.
Nope.
Nice try.
Yeah. So is this the thing about how he had people stay in his properties?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in D.C., essentially driving business away from others and directly into his pockets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, this stuff obviously makes a lot of sense because you remember Jimmy Carter had to give up his peanut farm.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a fucking peanut farm.
Yeah.
It's like, but nope, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, it's U.S. law,
man. We don't
want
him to be too sympathetic to Big Peanut.
Yeah.
To Mr. Peanut.
Yeah. But it doesn't stop there because Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, a.k.a. the Says Who guy, who looks like some throwaway extra from The Sopranos. Turns out he also is lawyered up, and the guy he's got might even be even worse.
Yeah, so this is all involving the Stormy Daniels stuff.
Yeah.
It just continues to
get worse and worse.
Yeah.
Because apparently she's actually gotten physical threats. Like the we're talking like protection, extortion, mafia type shit. It was like, that's a nice kid you got there. Sure would be a shame if something happened to her.
Yeah. You know,
that type of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, he had his lawyer, David Schwartz, mm-hmm. go out on all the TV shows to defend his client after the big 60 Minutes piece with Stormy mm-hmm. Daniels. And seemed to do a really bad job.
Oh, that's just, that is greatly underestimating.
Basically seemed to be doing a lot of harm to his own clients, as well as the president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this piece on the New York Mag site does a pretty good job of explaining a lot of stuff, but they have some tweets here from fellow lawyers that basically pointed out how the things he's saying are really bad.
Yeah.
So let's see. Michael Cohen's attorney just claimed on CNN that Trump was not aware of the Stormy Daniels agreement or the payment, which means that there was no contract between Trump and Daniels, and Daniels can release the materials. Why would he admit this on national television? The contract only lists remedies available to DD, Trump,
mm-hmm.
not to the LLC. Under the terms of the agreement itself, only DD can enforce it. If Cohen's position is that Trump is not DD, then unless someone else comes forward as DD, it is unenforceable and Stormy Daniels can release the materials.
Mm-hmm.
Other attorneys were similarly appalled. Let's see, Cohen's stupid plan could never work, but it's even stupider because Cohen wrote the stupid contract in a way that makes it crystal clear why it couldn't work, especially when that Trump waives his claims against Stormy as, quote, as materials, material inducements to her to enter into this agreement. Each party acknowledges that Stormy is executing this agreement in reliance on Trump releasing certain claims he has against Stormy. Michael Cohen can't offer that. ECLLC can't offer that either. Only Trump can. So if Trump ain't in the agreement, there is no agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so somebody replied to her, said, so he's saying, Michael Cohen, a lawyer, created and executed a contract involving on behalf of a client without ever notifying the client. And they say, there are just so many problems with this that it feels a bit silly to single any one of them out. Like,
yeah, it's like, wow, somebody, where do we start?
Like arguing that somebody's imaginary friend can't be elected president because he's not 35 years old yet and also Canadian.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Cohen's attorney speaks accurately, Cohen's behavior will be taught in professional responsibility as fraud mm-hmm. suitable for bar sanction.
Mm.
In addition to undermining the underlying breach of contract claim, he just admitted his client violated the ethical canons by entering into a settlement agreement without his client's consent. Cohen is going to be disbarred if this is true. Yeah, but that's not all. Later in the interview, Schwartz suggested Cohen regularly set up these sorts of agreements without telling his client, which seems to back up reports that Trump's attorneys, quote-unquote, took care of dozens of women during the campaign. He says, Michael was the fixer. It could be anything. There were a ton of matters that took place that Michael fixed. Donald Trump wasn't involved in every single matter, Schwartz said. Mm-hmm. He then walked that back, saying he meant business problems in general, and suggesting that business leaders commonly have a fixer authorized to pay people off without their knowledge. Cohen's lawyer's lawyer has a lot of explaining to do.
Is anybody else thinking what I'm thinking right now?
What is that?
If this guy wrote that contract that way, that poorly, so that's completely unenforceable.
Yeah.
How many others badly written contracts are there out there?
Yeah, that's actually a good point. If this dude's been Trump's lawyer for this long.
And it was stated right there, quote unquote, took care of dozens of allegations throughout the campaign.
Mm-hmm. And that basically means
fan.
Yeah, it means all these other NDAs may also be unenforceable, and
yeah, it brings to mind a part of Arrested Development when George is in the in prison talking about how stupid his lawyers are. He's like, "I have the worst fucking attorneys." <It's> like, that's kind of what Trump must be thinking.
Yeah. Well.
But.
All part of stupid Watergate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. See, that's the thing about the Trump administration that I've found. It's not just that they're evil, but they're incompetent evil.
Yeah.
It's like the Legion of the Dunces. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, and these guys make Dr. Evil look like a genius.
Yeah. I mean, even Dr. Evil has the semblance to recognize incompetence when he sees it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not, as long as it's not his own.
Yeah.
Chaotic stupid is a thing.
Yeah. But no, I guess that's going to be basically the it for the Trump portion of the show. Might as well just turn it into a regular segment.
Yeah. The Trump dump.
Yeah. We'll just call it unofficially. We won't actually.
Yeah.
But next up, so here in the United States, now I'm actually curious, so Phil, up there in Canada, do you guys have a law about if a person is convicted felon, then they can't vote?
Yeah.
You do?
And we have that law, and yeah, they can vote.
Oh, they can vote?
Yeah.
Convicted felons can vote in Canada.
Yes.
Yeah, see, here in the United States, you can't do that. If you're convicted of a felony, that's pretty much it. You can never vote again.
You're what they call disenfranchised.
Yeah. If you're, you could have been, okay, so like, here's a real life example, because I know it's a real life example because I saw it on, Adam Ruins Everything. One of the good guys he talked about was a dude who, back when he was a teenager, he was 19, he was convicted of armed robbery because he robbed a convenience store. So he was sentenced, I think it was like 10 years. And so while he was behind bars, he decided to basically legal up. He started going to the library. He started researching stuff. He actually started studying to become a lawyer. And he passed the bar exam, and he's a certified defense attorney. He takes both paid and pro bono cases, but because of that one mistake he made when he was 19, I mean, keep in mind, this dude paid his full sentence. He spent the entire 10 years, and came out of it. He's a good lawyer. He's never had a problem with the law since then. He's well-regarded, but because of that one conviction when he was 19, he can never vote again.
Yeah. Here, you can vote in jail. So.
Yeah. That's kind of tying into our next story here, because not only can you not vote if you've been convicted of a felony, but if you're out on probation, it is actually illegal for you to vote, or at least it is in the state of Texas. Because in this next story, a Texas woman spent a couple years in prison for a, I think it was a, was it a tax fraud conviction?
Yeah, she was a tax attorney, I think.
Yeah, and she decided to vote in the 2016 election, and because apparently, and here's the thing, apparently even her her parole officer didn't let her know that. Like, apparently even her parole officer thought that it was legal.
Yeah, nobody told her ahead of time.
Yeah, and because of that, she's now facing 5 years in prison.
Yeah, so she was just gotten off out of prison from a tax fraud conviction, was still on probation, under supervised with her probation officer and all that. Yeah, wanted to go vote because she did not know there was any issues. She obviously wasn't on the roll call, so she had to file a provisional ballot.
Yeah.
And apparently it mentions on there directly that, you know, she should not be voting.
Yeah.
But just due to the way things go when you're doing all that stuff, you're being hurried. She did not have the time to read it. And the person that's person that was helping her out probably should have asked her a couple questions.
See, this is the reason why election dates need to be national holidays in the United States.
Yes.
Because, see, this wouldn't be – this is one of those things where it wouldn't be an issue where they would have to constantly hurry people through because they have to get to work.
Yeah, you can ensure you have enough people there working to be able to help everybody. Not just be like, ah, you're not on the list. You got to go over there.
Yeah.
They'll help you out eventually, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, she is, I think when she was indicted, she said, you think I would jeopardize my freedom? You honestly think I would ever want to leave my babies again? That was the hardest thing in my life to deal with. Who would, as a mother, as a provider, leave their kids over voting?
Yeah.
Because I guess she just had one kid graduate from high school. I had another one that was going to be, I think, in the next year or so. And was definitely not planning on doing anything that would get her in trouble. But also, you can probably guess that she's not white. Because I saw some stories about, oh, there's a woman in, I think, South Carolina? Oh, South or North Carolina, that used her dead mother's name to vote twice for Trump.
Yeah.
And she got off with a warning. It's like, oh, she's just very enthusiastic for trying for attempted fraud.
Voter
fraud.
Yeah.
You could tell she's probably white.
Yep.
So yeah, there's and now she's I guess her kids, as she was being let off back to jail, her kids were saying bye bye, Big Mama. Yeah, and she's basically said she's never voting again. She's been that disenfranchised. Said, I don't think I'll ever vote again. Let's be honest, I'll never vote again.
Congratulations, America. You failed that woman. I hope you're proud of yourselves.
You've encouraged anybody else with sketchy past to not vote. Because it's not like they're doing enough to try to disenfranchise people to begin with.
Yeah. And, oh, the Texas fun doesn't stop there. At our next one, so in Mansfield, Texas, there was a school. There's a school teacher. I think she's an art teacher.
Yeah,
Art teacher who was at an elementary school. And then so she's been there. And then at some point, there was complaints from some parents about the fact about her sexual orientation. She is a lesbian.
Yeah, she had talked about it with the kids.
Yeah, and so. The Texas school, the school did exactly what you thought a school in Texas was going to do. They placed her on leave.
Yep, she's been suspended with pay since September 8th. Still, parents, I think at one of the recent parents teacher meetings were pleading with them to, you know, stop this. And just put her back in because The kids loved her.
Mm-hmm.
She's very much an attentive teacher. She had won a Teacher of the Year award, I think, in 2016. Mm-hmm. So she was very much a great teacher.
Yeah.
Was just willing to talk about her life. Much like the way that, you know, straight teachers will talk about their husband or wife or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Obviously don't get suspended because they talk about their private life.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, she was also kind of at the same time talking to officials about the discrimination rules about getting LGBT terms added to that
mm-hmm.
for the various people that would like that, including herself.
Mm-hmm.
School officials said that the way they're written right now essentially prevents all of that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't need to change anything. But obviously when this sort of situation comes up, it's like, yeah, no. Mm-hmm. It just takes one parent to get upset about their kids hearing about gay people that get somebody taken off.
Mm-hmm. I would like to say that, you know, being Texas, this doesn't surprise me. But it still infuriates me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's probably knows by now the Board of Education in Texas is notoriously hyper-conservative and super-fundamentalist, and because they're one of the biggest textbook buyers in the country, however goes the Texas Board of Education, so goes a lot of the rest of the schools in the nation. So, wonderful.
Yeah.
But hopefully this is a pretty clear civil rights violation, so.
Yeah. I think the ACLU is on us already.
Yeah. So, next up, we got a story about the Pope and the Vatican. Pope Francis, he has a tendency to say things that don't necessarily line up with church orthodoxy. And,
he'll rock the boat.
Huh? What?
He'll rock the boat.
Yeah. And, this time, Vatican is basically trying to deny that the Pope said there's no hell, when he gave an interview with an Italian journalist.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of history. This guy, the journalist, is an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a few interviews with him before. He is 93,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't record the conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So he just goes off of his memory and the notes he takes of what he says.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the big issue here, is that he doesn't know for 100% sure that he said there is no hell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let's see. What do you say here? Yeah, he's talking about how there's no hell itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, souls are not punished. Those who repent obtain God's forgiveness and go among the ranks of those who contemplate him. Those who do not repent and cannot be forgiven disappear. There is no hell. There is the disappearance of sinful souls.
Okay, see, that's actually a doctrine called annihilationism. Mm-hmm. And it is considered heterodox at best in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Now the Pope is one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, annihilationism is actually really a lot more of a Protestant thing. Specifically, it's like with like some like Jehovah's Witnesses, for example.
Yeah,
are annihilationists. Yeah. So, and the truth of the matter is, the church has been kind of up and down when it comes to orthodoxy over the last few decades, because they're. I guess it's because, you know, in the current age of, you know, science and reason, you know, it's just ideas like that just don't really fly anymore.
Yeah.
If that is what he actually said, like word for word, then
yeah.
Vatican may need to have a council and start rethinking some of their doctrine. Because
yeah, I guess I talked to one of the other cardinals, Cardinal Vincent Nichols, who said there's nowhere in Catholic teaching that actually says any one person is in hell. He told the BBC that the Pope was apparently exploring the imagery of hell, fire and brimstone, and all of that.
Yeah.
That's never been part of Catholic teaching. It's been part of Catholic iconography, part of Christian iconography.
Yeah. See, I will give Catholics at least this much. Most Roman Catholics are very much aware of the idea that scripture and iconography, a lot of it is supposed to be allegorical.
Yeah.
And that has been the tradition in the Catholic Church for centuries now.
Yeah.
Apparently Protestants aren't really that good at catching up. Take it from somebody who was raised a Southern Baptist.
Yeah. So.
But, yeah, so that's that is fascinating. He's been, I gotta tell you, Pope Francis has been, as soon as he was elected Pope, he was pretty much rocking the boat almost from the get-go.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more interesting than the Nazi Pope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, now we go off to another really just bizarre story. DMX. He just wouldn't give it to him. So, for those who don't know, DMX is currently getting charged for, is being tried and was convicted of a serious fraud. And he's facing like a big sentence if he's completely convicted, if he's given it. What was the max sentence supposed to be?
3 years?
Yeah. And basically, in order to try and avoid getting the max sentence, his lawyers actually played one of his songs for the judge.
Yeah, played Slippin', which is sort of a autobiographical song.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. Quote here, I've been through mad different phases, like mazes, to find my way, and now I know that happy days are not far away. Yeah, the attorney played the music in effort to illustrate how far Simmons has come since his horrific childhood, which involved physical and emotional abuse, how promising it looks for him, despite this tax evasion stuff.
Yeah.
Where, let's see, federal prosecutors said Simmons owes $1.7 million in unpaid taxes from income made between 2002 and 2005, and he also failed to file taxes from 2010 to 2015. When he made at least $2.3 million.
Oops.
His lawyers insist that his client deserved mercy. His life experiences were horrible. I've heard terrible tales, but I've never heard such horrible upbringing as this. We thought the video would really demonstrate to the court just what he had to go through to get where he was.
Uh-huh.
That somehow that made him ill-prepared to have money.
Uh-huh.
Like a lot of money, which... not a great defense.
No,
but I guess it worked in this case.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, for the record, DMX has 12 kids, all by 12 different women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Apparently, motherfucker never heard of a condom.
Nope.
Nope. Okay, it was a 5-year prison term the prosecutors were seeking, citing his past offenses and past drug use. Which, I don't know. I don't know about the drug use part of it needing to add to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he ended up getting just a year.
Mm-hmm.
So not as bad as it could have been.
So it kind of worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, well, his lawyer has earned his keep, I would guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well... now for something silly to something infuriating. The Environmental Protection Agency these days doesn't really seem to be in the business of protecting the environment all that much, does it?
No, yeah. And doesn't really seem to mean much anymore.
Yeah, it's recently come out that they've issued memos to employees that contain talking points that they're supposed to use to try and downplay climate change.
Yep. As 8 talking points here. The first few are okay, they're just about like helping communities adapt to it,
mm-hmm.
adapt to the changing climate.
Yeah.
But the last few are not great. Human activity impacts our climate, our changing climate in some manner.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to measure with precision the degree and extent of the of that impact and what to do about it are subject to continuing debate and dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not.
No, I think
no, it's we have it's a not.
Pretty good idea about what's been going on. I think
the people
in
Paris have kind of figured that out.
Yeah. Yeah.
While there has been extensive research and a host of published reports on climate change, clear gaps remain, including our understanding of the role of human activity and what we can do about it. Again, no.
Yeah.
We've had a pretty clear, there's a pretty good chart. It's like once humans got to like the industrial age,
mm-hmm.
The line on the graph goes way up real mm-hmm. fast.
Yep.
As a key regulatory voice, it is important for the agency to strive for a better understanding of these gaps, given their potential significant influence on our country's domestic economic viability. Yeah, you should, but you can do that right now.
Yeah.
It's not, I think it takes years to do. Mm. It's, mm. you look at the papers that have been put out, you understand them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Administrator Pruitt encourages an open, transparent debate on climate science.
Debate's been settled, motherfucker. Yeah.
It's been open for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're just...
You're the last motherfucker trying to keep it open.
You're sticking your fingers in your ears going, la, 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 I don't hear you, la, la, yeah. la, la.
And the best, but the best part about this is nobody's freaking buying it.
Nope.
No.
You ever get the feeling that some point in our lifetime, a bunch of other countries are going to come together and actually put economic sanctions on the United States?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All you need is China to do it, and you lose a lot of manufacturing. Mm.
If you got China, India, Russia, and what's the last one? Mm. I can't think of what.
Japan or Korea.
Yeah, I got all of them together, and they formed like an economic union. Mm. They could totally pass sanctions on the United States.
Mm.
But, and, it, you know, and if that sounds like something that might scare you, well, you know, there are ways to alleviate that.
Yeah.
This shit ain't helping.
Nope. Try, you know, not being stupid. That would be a good place to start.
Don't be so stupid, stupid. Yeah. Why are you so stupid? But, next up in environmental news, everybody knows now about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. It's this big thing of plastic and garbage that's just right in the middle of the Pacific. You can't really see it from space because it's just under the water.
Yeah.
But it's just high enough that if you're actually there, you can see it very clearly.
Hmm.
And now for some really bad news. Turns out that thing is a lot larger than we originally thought. In fact, 16 times larger.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it was discovered in 1997,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, we have not done a ton of research on the thing.
Nope.
So yeah, what's in it? Microplastics makes up about 94% of it.
Mm-hmm.
1.8 trillion pieces of plastic in it.
Yeah.
But that's about 8% of the total weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's 79,000 metric tons of plastic. Most of it is abandoned fishing gear, not plastic bottles or other sort of packaging stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of a misconception. Think that it's like all water bottles and stuff. That's not to say water bottles aren't in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the vast majority is like garbage from fishing boats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which now brings up the question of what can we do to try and reduce that? Because if it's mostly fishing boats, I'm pretty sure we can find some ways to turn those materials into something biodegradable.
Yeah, well,
if we really put our...
There were those silkworms that can eat plastic now, so...
Yeah.
That'd be one way.
Might be right. It might be time to start letting a couple of those loose in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's see. Fishing nets accounts for about 46% of the trash.
Mm-hmm.
The rest includes things like ropes, oyster spacers, eel traps, crates, and baskets.
Yep.
20% of the debris is from the 2011 Japanese tsunami.
Yeah.
Yeah, that messed things up quite a bit.
Yep. Yeah, so they're trying to just do a lot more research on the bigger pieces and try and learn more about it. Somebody says here, I knew there would be a lot of fishing gear, but 46% was unexpectedly high.
Yeah.
Initially, we thought fishing gear would be more in the 20% range. That is the accepted number for marine debris globally, 20% from fishing sources and 80% from land. And so they talk about ghost nets.
Mm-hmm.
That are purposely discarded or accidentally lost netting, drift through the ocean and tangle whales, seals, and turtles.
Yep.
Estimated about 100,000 marine animals strangle or suffocate in those sort of plastics every year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're working on a way to try and remove as much of the stuff as they can. This group called Ocean Cleanup who did this study.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. But if you're wondering why all this stuff gets dumped off of fishing vessels, well, have you ever seen a fishing vessel before? They aren't particularly large.
Nope.
And there's only so much, you know, and there's usually like a few people, four or five people working on those things at a time. Mm-hmm. So space is kind of a luxury that...
Yeah, space is kind of a luxury, and you bring in a catch. Some types of stuff that you caught it with doesn't end up staying on the boat.
Nope. Especially if you're like, you're catching like sharks or something.
Yeah.
Holy shit, those things will eat through shit really quick.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, and you could sort of... They had a number of ships going around sort of collecting stuff to learn more about this. They found 50 plastic items that they had collected had a readable production date.
Mm-hmm.
One from 1977, mm-hmm. 7 from the 80s, 17 from the 90s, 24 from the 2000s, and 1 from 2010.
Yeah.
There's still
So it looks like the worst of it actually is from like the new from since the turn of the millennium.
Yeah.
Researchers also found 386 objects with recognizable word sentences in 9 different languages.
Mm.
Which I imagine it's probably a lot from, you know, Japan, Korea, all those South Pacific islands. Because that would be a good place for all the tsunamis and such to bring all the crap from.
Stuff eventually, yeah.
And they seem to suggest if we don't really do anything about this, that could triple.
Mm. Yeah.
Numbers could triple by 2050.
Yeah.
And could be one of the big threats to the seas, along with the warming oceans and sea level rise.
Yeah. But again, as we say with the climate change stuff, all of these worst case scenarios only happen if we don't do anything.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's try and solve it.
Yeah.
We will solve this.
Yeah.
It will happen.
We're working on it.
Yes. Mm. We already mentioned those silkworms. By the time we post this, people may already be getting ready to huck a couple of those into the Pacific. You don't know. Yeah. So speaking of science, we've discovered a new organ in the human body. Yeah, I gotta be.
I thought they had all been pretty well documented.
Well, apparently not. It's one of the largest organs on your body, mostly because it's related to your flesh. It's these little air sacs that are just below the the subcutaneous layer or something.
Yeah, it's called the interstitium. So yeah, it's not officially a new organ yet because. Mm. It has to be like a general consensus among scientists, but at least this new study is starting to put down their reasoning for all of this. So it's sort of fluid-filled spaces discovered in connective tissues all over the body, including below the skin surface, on the digestive tract, lungs, and urinary systems, and surrounding muscles that makes up the interstitium.
Mm.
Researchers had initially thought before that these tissue layers were just a dense wall of collagen.
Mm.
But yeah, this new finding reveals that it's not really a wall, but more like an open fluid-filled highway.
Yep. So See, even the human body hasn't been completely mapped out yet. Yeah. So,
well, I feel less dumb tonight.
Yeah. Now, go out and massage your instertidium today. Okay. Anyway, now I got some news from NASA. So, NASA is getting ready to send out a solar probe. They're calling it the Parker Solar Probe. It's going out so they can study the sun, and it's going to go out this summer. Yep. So,
July 31st is when it's going to launch aboard a Delta 4 rocket. Mm-hmm. It's been designed and built by the Johns Hopkins University's Applied Physics Laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
NASA's been managing it. And it's going to be essentially, I think they have, I'm not sure if they have the diagram in this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to basically be launched at, I think, Neptune? Not Neptune, Venus.
Yeah, Venus.
And sort of slingshot off of that gravity to go towards the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to kind of do to go around the sun.
Yeah, it's
just going to be doing this weird elliptical orbit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to go into the corona.
Yeah,
at just about 4 million miles above its surface.
Mm-hmm.
Closest a spacecraft has ever gotten to the sun.
Yeah,
and it's going to be able to survive it.
Yeah, and we're actually going to get pictures. Are we going to get pictures?
Yeah,
I believe so. I
wow, that's good. Okay, that is going to be legitimately amazing to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I mean, it's going to have to take some time for those photos and footage to make it back, but...
Yeah.
Yep, and this is all being done to try to learn more about the sun,
mm-hmm.
to help them better predict when we're going to get, like, solar wind.
Yeah, solar wind. Solar,
and all the sort of disturbances that could potentially really... damaging to the Earth if we get really bad ones.
Yeah.
Because I believe I had seen that one of the closest solar systems we have to us, we had recently discovered that their sun had a big solar flare, and the planet that we thought was most like Earth likely was wiped out.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah, let's make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah,
we believe our sun is much more stable than that.
Yep.
So we don't think there's going to be too much of a problem, but we definitely would like to be able.
Well,
to...
Well, you want to make sure.
Yeah. And
plan for
you do
the
that by learning from it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And one of the cool things is NASA is actually taking names to put on. I don't think on the craft, mm-hmm. but you can like submit your name to get put in it.
Yeah.
So they're taking, you know, names for, I think for a little while now, but, I think you have to do is just look up the Parker Solar Probe.
Mm-hmm.
It should bring up the NASA site and they let you submit your name. And they'll send you like a little, PDF certificate you can print out, like, hey, my name's been in this.
Yeah.
And all that. It's pretty neat. So if you want to be part of history.
Yep.
I wonder how many Cindy McSun faces they got.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Of course.
At least one.
Yeah, I'm sure people will do that.
Yeah.
It seems like just put your actual name. It's like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then when the aliens find it, they know where to go.
Yeah.
Who to probe.
Yeah. Well, next up, now we're getting ready for the entertainment portion of the show. So I guess there was going to be a Deadpool animated series.
Yep. It's going to be FX.
And it got canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah. People were thinking, oh, Donald Glover's big now. He's, you know, doing Star Wars and
mm-hmm.
all this other stuff, so he's obviously too busy.
Yeah, so he decided to respond to that by putting out a mock script, and
yep, he basically said for the first tweets, for the record, I wasn't too busy to work on Deadpool.
Yeah,
they have the tweets embedded as well as a link to the full thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. It's nicely sharply written. Essentially, has Deadpool going to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
to save Sudan. One of the last rhinos.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's potentially related to the last northern white rhino that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
So yeah, he goes over there and like one of the first jokes is him waking up from sleeping and yelling out, "Don't let Ben Carson operate on me." Yeah, it has some good jokes. There's a fight with Zachariah where he, let's see, where's it at? Let's see. There's a good joke.
I'm sure there's a bunch of good jokes in there.
Yeah, but this one's pretty good.
It's Deadpool.
Okay, yeah. Zachariah furrows his brow in anger. He quickly draws his gun, but Deadpool draws his faster. He fires one shot that hits Zachariah right between the eyes, killing him instantly. Deadpool, to camera. Take notes, teachers of America. Someday you'll have to make a high-pressure shot like that. Sedan.
Ow.
Let's go home, Sedan. The two walk off into the sunset. Oh. It's beautiful and everything feels right. In the distance we hear Deadpool's Bitcoin alert goes off. And also part of this whole thing, he heard about the Beyonce getting your face bitten by somebody. So he's been like getting updates as to who it was. As well as he also is getting paid in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all part of this. It's a pretty good read.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Pat, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. You're kind of snoring a lot over there.
Yeah, I can do that when I'm awake. It's pretty brutal.
Nice.
It's all posture. I hate it.
Nice.
So...
All right, well, next up. All right, so I am a big fan of the three-body problem.
Yes, I am.
Ian, as is Phil, and just... his Cijin Liu, in general, has proven himself to probably be one of the great science fiction authors of today. In fact, he's the first Asian person to have won the Hugo Award for Best Novel.
Yep.
Apparently Amazon wanted to get the rights to the three-body problem for, I guess, an original series. Yep. Since, you know, they're doing the same with the Man in the High Castle.
Yep.
They wanted it very badly.
Yes, they actually sank $1 billion into acquiring the rights for the three-body problem.
Just for the rights. I haven't even started making it yet.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks that whoever was, Cijin and, whoever's in charge of the account just threw out, the $1 billion number, and Amazon's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Zero fucks given.
Yeah.
I guess that's what they paid for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
No, they paid $500 million for Lord of the Rings, I think.
Yeah, half as much.
Yeah.
No, it says here it was $1 billion.
Huh. Well, okay, so Amazon's willing to throw the money around.
Yeah.
So the details here so far is I think they're going to do three series, which kind of would line up with the three books, I would imagine.
Mm.
So no idea on how many episodes per series as of yet, but...
Mm.
God, I hope this is good. If it's actually true that they've signed the deal, then
yeah.
Oh boy, Amazon is becoming a really amazing place for sci-fi in particular.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a bunch of producers over in the PRC who would love to get their fingers into this pie.
Yeah,
true,
and probably some government officials as well.
Yeah.
This is the PRC we're talking about, after all.
Yeah.
If Xi Jinping doesn't show up in this whole situation somehow, I would be greatly surprised. All right. So next up, this guy. Yeah.
That guy.
Chris Felucci. I think that's his last name.
Yeah, John Crick Felucci.
Yeah, John Crick Felucci, the creator of Ren and Stimpy. Yeah, so everybody knows that obviously Ren and Stimpy was amazing.
Yeah.
It was a groundbreaking cartoon. Yeah. The animation was great. The overall sort of aesthetic of it was very original.
Yeah.
The second series, not so much.
No, second
series. Yeah, and that partly
didn't
is...
exist.
Yeah, and that's partly due to Crick Volucci himself. He is notoriously flaky, a perfectionist, and he's also just, in general, a massive asshole.
Hmm.
He's just a very nasty, icky person.
Hmm.
So...
Yeah, what's he done this time?
So this whole story is about how
you're
in...
not going to like this. Just we're
In 94, he had gotten a letter from a 13-year-old girl who was a big fan of his show, very much wanted to be an artist and work on animation when she grew up. She probably didn't know that it would take about 3 years for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
She got brought on as his intern and also became his girlfriend at 16.
Mm.
He was about 41, I think.
Yeah, it's one of those situations, folks.
Yeah. He talked about the 25-year difference being romantic.
That's, that's not the word I'd use.
Yeah,
I would use something along the terms of you.
Mm.
Yeah, so very much a lot of talk in this piece on BuzzFeed News about him grooming her.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and we need to make clear what we mean specifically when we're talking about grooming in this particular situation. It's basically when a predator, which Crick Volucci is very clearly is in this situation, is basically giving them a lot of gifts and basically trying to butter them up to the point where they're more open to their sexual advances.
And taking advantage of their own lack of self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Talked a lot about just to put you in the time and place, he helped her get her first AOL account.
Mm-hmm.
Through which he convinced her he could help her become a great artist.
Mm-hmm.
He visited her at the trailer park where she lived in Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
As she says, I thought I was still his little cute friend, she said. And then when she was still in 11th grade, he flew her to Los Angeles to show her a studio and talk about her future. She said that on the same trip in a room with a sliding glass door that led to his pool, mm-hmm. he touched her genitals through her pajamas as she lay frozen on a blanket he placed on the floor. She was 16.
Mm-hmm.
For senior year of high school, he flew her to Los Angeles again, where Bird had an internship at Spumco, his studio, and lived with him as a 16-year-old girlfriend and intern. After finishing her senior year in Tucson, the tiny, dark-haired girl moved in with Crick Volucci permanently at age 17. She told herself that he was helping her to launch her career, and she fled animation to get away from him.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not the only girl.
Of course she isn't, because it's always more than one in these situations.
Yep, yeah. They also talk about Kitty Rice, an old internet friend of his. Let's see. Yeah, she also met her through AOL in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the first girl introduced them. He was telling them both that she would hire them both at Spumco someday.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently never had a physical relationship with Rice, but he would definitely hit on her when she was a minor.
Mm-hmm.
Ranged from writing flirty letters, like, I'll bet you'll be up to no good, just like me. He wrote in 96, to masturbating while she was on the phone. Mm. In 2001, Rice was 18, trying to break into animation. He offered her a job, when she started working for him. Rice said he persistently sexually harassed her.
Mm.
And there's a lot more.
Yeah.
In the article that's to be said, I don't know if there's a lot more to the things that went on, but definitely a lot of harassment and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the first girl talks about how first, she didn't see the harm. Or no, this is Rice. At the time, she didn't see the harm. I think this 40-year-old man is hitting on me. She wrote in a diary entry from between December 95 and March 96. saying her friend agreed with her. Rice then 14 continued in her diary, but he's never perverted. He's also very nice. He gives me a lot of drawing tips. Yeah. There's a lot more to read. People should definitely read it just to get the full picture.
Yeah.
I am never going to watch Ren and Stimpy again.
Yeah.
There's a nice little point here at the end. Rice is unequivocal about Craig Felicity. I became a better artist by working for him. She said, I'm not grateful for it. I wish I had. I wish I were a worse artist now, and I didn't have all this bullshit to deal with.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I guess the first girl said, he ruined a good bit of my childhood and my early adulthood, gave me PTSD, and forced me to change careers, putting my life 10 years or more behind. He is an abuser in the way that he will pull you into a relationship with him and then tell you who to be and what he wants from you. Everybody needs to know about it.
Yeah. Oh. It's just, it's a really gross story.
Yeah.
More for fallout from the Me Too.
Oh, boy. But I mean, apparently, like people have said, people have known about a lot of this shit for years. Like,
yeah.
People who've worked at Spumco have basically said that he was basically a serial harasser.
Yeah.
But, you know, known of and being willing to actually say anything about it is two different things.
Yeah.
The situation needed to be framed in the current time and climate.
Yeah.
Which is sad, but that's how it ended up going.
Yeah.
And also seeing just his work over the last, like, 5-10 years, this coming out really was not a huge surprise.
No.
No.
Not really.
He seemed very much into, I don't know, just the ickiness.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen I guess by now everyone's seen the Lost Ren and Stimpy episode, the Naked Beach Party one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is basically just soft porn, cartoon porn.
Yeah.
Admittedly, well animated and pretty quality softcore cartoon porn, but
still softcore cartoon porn.
And honestly, there's nothing wrong with softcore cartoon porn except for the fact that this is the source of it. And
yeah.
And that in the adult party cartoon stuff.
Yeah.
Ren and Stimpy, like, a lot of gay jokes and innuendo and all that. It's like,
yeah.
Yes, this isn't cool anymore when it's just laying right there. Yeah.
Also, when you figure out that one of the girls that was in that Naked Beach cartoon is a character called Sody Pop.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know this. Apparently, when she was originally created in the, she was originally in a comics anthology that Craig Felucci drew for, she was underage.
Ooh.
Shocking.
Yeah, I think I saw a thing where he was on Howard Stern bragging about that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it would be Howard Stern.
Yeah. But, Lord, just... Man, it, when you find out shit like this, you go back and watch old Ren and Stimpy, and you just start seeing things, man.
Yep.
And now it's impossible to not have that association in your brain.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, to finally end it off for the night, Netflix, which I am now a regular subscriber to, have recently now announced that there is going to be a live-action Carmen Sandiego film, and it's going to star Gina Rodriguez.
Yep, they're also doing a animated show.
Mm-hmm.
She's also the voice of Carmen Sandiego, so it's just keeping that going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if there's too much more to this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm pretty sure most of us played that game when we were in school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was a thing for you guys, but it was up here. So, yeah, we have pretty good memories of that kind of thing. And a lot of us are parents now and do kind of want to share what we went through with those sorts of things with our kids.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so the show is supposed to be out in 2019.
Ooh, they're announcing this.
Yeah, so I think also the company that owns the rights to Carmen Sandiego Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, a publishing company. They're going to be publishing new books. They'll be launching around the same time.
Nice.
So that will be a good thing for parents. See, the movie will be standalone, embrace the 90s property, no writer or director attached to it yet. I think that's about it.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm all for this.
Yeah. The production company is producing the movie.
Yeah. I got to tell you, man, I mean, as far as edutainment goes, you can't do much better.
Nope.
As far as the 90s are concerned.
Yep.
Although I never quite understood what her angle was. Like, she's basically stealing all of these big national monuments for what purpose?
To teach you.
So she was really the hero all along.
Yeah, teach you.
Anti-hero.
Get you to, travel the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wrapping
up those freaking
teaching you with crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do believe we got a show, folks. So,
I
would like to remind our viewers, if you've got a comment or question you want to send into the show, or if you got something you just want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it linked in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can hear our little recorded shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and anywhere that serially recorded shenanigans like ours are produced and heard. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Analfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Delogie, I'd like to say goodnight, sleep tight, and the kids are just all right.